Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here from the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I've got a friend here on the show, JT. We've known each other for a while, and I got a chance to meet him in person, and he's been recommended so many times on this show. And I asked JT, I was like, hey, what do you want to talk about? He's like, I'm open to anything. And so in this episode, we dive deep into his business. We talk a lot about marketing and what he's doing with offers. I think you're going to get a lot of perspective on what he's doing with marketing and probably a lot of nuggets as well from this episode. So make sure you pay attention. You may want to listen to this a few times, but I've got JT here. He's going to share all about his land business and the things that he's working on and how he's grown his land business. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, how's it going, everybody? All right. I've got my good friend JT here on the podcast with me. JT, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Well, I just want to, you know, come on to the show here and, you know, you've been like, a lot of people have said, yeah, you got to get JT on the show. You got to get JT on the show. I finally got you on the show here. We've spoken before. We've actually met in person in Korea, right? Yeah. We actually got to meet like on the opposite side of the planet. But JT, why don't you give us a little bit of understanding of, you know, how did you get into land? When did that all start? Give us a little bit of a history with you and your land business.
Yeah, so I first started into land when I stumbled across an educator on a podcast in like Q2 2018. And I heard them talking about land and I thought, wow, that's, if half of what they're saying is true, this has got to be something we're checking out. So did a deep dive and came out the other side and decided to kind of jump into Seth Williams' course. And from there, kind of, you know, blasted out. It's like, okay, let's try postcards. And at the time it was 300 green postcards. That was my like opening volley, you know, and miraculously that got me a couple of deals, which would be unheard of today, but it worked out brilliantly at the time.
Yeah, yeah. And for those of you guys who are listening, wondering who Seth Williams is, he runs a fantastic blog, retipster.com. He's a good friend of ours as well. So make sure you do check that out. And in fact, that's, you know, also where I got started from as well. And also, you know, a bunch of yellow postcards, you know, a few hundred landed some deals. that's how it started back then. And so fast forward now, you know, five years later now, 4 years, no, 6 years later, I can't do math. You know, what does the business now look like? You started from 500 postcards or 300 postcards. What does it look like now? What are you doing differently? Let's say on the marketing side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've definitely come a long way in that five, almost 6 years. And, last year we sent, we've migrated from postcards over to through several phases, but ultimately ended up in kind of a two-page blind offer, which is where we are super honed in on. And the last year we sent about 250,000 units. And we tried a couple of different, you know, kind of, we're at the phase now, we're testing all kinds of different things. So we're testing different types of mail and different letter types and different envelopes kind of across the board because we just never really know how it's going to go, right? And I find that that iteration seems to be speeding up a little bit, at least in my approximation. In the last year, like I just probably this time last year, I started hearing these rumblings about like, mail's having trouble and things are tougher. And then that kind of continued all the way through Q2 23. And people were just saying like how much harder it was for them to get the yield they were expecting in mail. And we did see that as well to some extent. But that's when we really started to have to even diversify further because previous to that, we were like, yeah, we got these letters. They work well. We're going to make a few adjustments here and there, but they just keep consistently delivering. So we don't have to make major changes. But, you know, we really started shaking things up last year. And this year we have the big focus for us in Q1 and Q2 is kind of revamping that further and kind of dialing in our testing. It's never been as tight as it should be. And so we're always trying to improve on that.
Wow. So it sounds like you do a lot of testing with mailing. And
and it sounds like you really stuck to mailing. A lot of people have been sort of staying away or looking beyond mailing. It never seems to be, well, maybe I do hear middle ground, but I hear the, you know, the opposite ends of the spectrum here. And you're someone that continues to dial in your mailing. Why do you like sending mailing? Is it just because it works and you're going to stick with it? What's sort of the mindset with that?
Yeah. So for me and for us as a company, ultimately, I'd had to sit back and decide what kind of organization do I want, right? What kind of team do I want? How do I want the company to run? And as I did that a few years back, it became clear to me that I wanted a super small team. I wanted highly qualified leads, right? And the best method that I know of to do that in land is direct mail, right? Mm-hmm. It is very much an inbound marketing channel as opposed to outbound, like, you know, texting or cold calling, these other methods where you're driving out. I just want to generate the marketing and have them call us. And so the type of lead that we get, how the level of qualification is so much higher with direct mail as opposed to the other methods. And we have dabbled in other things, tried more neutral approaches or tried texting or, you know, tried online like kind of PPC ads. And none of them really got us the kind of lead we were looking for. And we always struggled with them. And I didn't realize why that was until about 6 months ago when it became clear that, like, oh man, what I'm looking for is inbound leads, not outbound leads. And like, that wasn't until I had kind of learned more about how that works that like that clicked in my mind. Like, that's why I've always loved mail. That's why I keep doing mail. And at this point, like, we're going to keep scaling into mail. Like, in, for our goals, well into the eight figures. Like, we don't want to, I don't see any reason to leave mail until we get past that point, right? Because there's just so much opportunity in mail. I mean, we're only in two states right now, right? And we're doing great. And so I don't see us having to leave those two states for the next while. And I don't see us having to leave mail.
And so you've been sending out mailing consistently throughout the year, is that right?
Yeah, historically, we've actually done it in big tranches. So we're not like, we don't do much of a drip style campaigns. We'll send like 100,000 units in one mailer, and then we'll wait like a quarter and then send another 80,000 units. You know, like that's how we've kind of done it in the past. This year, we are doing it more consistently, but we're not lowering our volume. So our target for the year is about 600,000 units. So like we're planning on sending out these much larger tranches, but we're doing it on a more like 5 to 7 week basis, right? Like consistent throughout the year.
You know, you mentioned something earlier. You said that you had the intention and meaning to keep the team small. What is that reason? Is it, you know, is it something personal? Is it something that's what you just enjoy? You seem very clear on that, and you've got a lot of clarity around that. It seems like you've even shaped your marketing towards that. So I'm sure you've given a lot of thought. What's sort of behind all of that?
I think for me, it originally came in my corporate role before I moved into doing land full time. I worked as a network engineer, and I had my boss approach me multiple times and say, "Hey, I want you to take on this manager role. I want you to lead the team. I want you to do these things." And my response to him was always like, "Yeah, see, humans are complicated, and I don't know that I really want to get involved in like having to manage them a lot." And so like kind of set my tone for the kind of team I wanted. And as I've gone into my business career and I've tried, you know, hiring VAs and all these different things, the more people I have under my wing that I have to like, support and take care of. And I want to take care of my team. If they're going to be on my team, I want them to succeed, but I kind of have a limit to that. Right. I like that. I believe the Army does something like, you know, like a 4 to 6 or 6 to 8, like it's not a big team size, right? They shoot for like this optimal team size. And that's where I find I live. Like my core team right now, we made 2 hires in December and went from like 2+ me to 4+ me. So now we're at 5, including myself. And there's a few like kind of specialists that I work on the edges with, but that's our core team right now is 5 people. And that's going to take us well past our goals this year with just those 5. That is where I want to be. I want to live in that world. I don't want to have to manage 12, 15 people. That is like too much, and I will not enjoy it. And if I don't want to build a business, I don't enjoy.
And I think people should really take that in and what you just said. You don't want to build a business you don't enjoy. And I think a lot of people sort of kind of go on autopilot. And it's, again, it sounds like you've given it a lot of thought into where you want to be. So That is awesome to hear. Now, mailing sounds like it's working for you. I mean, would you be open to sharing, you know, you're talking about blind offers. I'll sort of leave it open, but I get asked this a lot, you know, how do I go about pricing? Are there some sort of general guidelines as to how you go about pricing for properties, maybe in the areas that you're working out of? What do you typically do? I'll leave that open-ended for you to answer.
Yeah, I would say the system that we have for pricing isn't one that most people want to replicate, to be honest. I can talk about what we do, and I'll talk about some of the principles that guide us. So in general, for us, pricing is about getting as tight as possible. So in places like the West, where you have like very logical APN schemas, you can go in and we will price down to the APN block. Well, we'll basically identify like this group of properties gets this price at these acreage ranges. So we'll break it down by acreage range, we'll break it down by APN schema, or if that's, you know, if we need to go up a level, we'll break it down by zip code, or, you know, all the way up to county. And often what we'll do, and even on the East Coast, like where it's not as logical, the APN layout, we basically say, what is the smallest cluster that we can identify? And then how do we price that in as detailed a way as possible? And so sometimes that means it's going to be like X county and Y zip code. And so, and counties and zip codes aren't exactly on top of each other. So you'll have a zip code that covers multiple counties or a county that has multiple zip codes. So usually we'll say, okay, if it's in this part of the county and in this zip code, it's going to be in this section, right? And then we'll go ahead and say everything from 1 to 3 acres is this price and 3 to 7 is this, and whatever the breakdowns are, it varies by area, but we'll break it up by acreage. We'll break it down to what we believe the price is as a good average per acre. And then we'll use that to set our pricing. And so we have probably 10,000 lines of custom pricing right now. And I have you don't want to replicate the way you do it, but I have literally like an appraiser working part-time year round, just like pricing everything in our areas and keeping it up to date, because we want really, really detailed pricing. And we use some custom code to apply that to the mailers. But in general, I think if people are going to be detailed on their pricing, I would say if they're going to do blind offers, they need to be detailed on their pricing. And if they're going to be detailed, you need to get it as focused as you can. The shotgun approach is better with something like a ranged offer. It just doesn't work, in my opinion, nearly as well if you're doing a true blind offer.
Now, if somebody were to start in land and come in to start figuring out how to price, with your methodology, you know, you've got a team there to help you price. You're looking in very accurately. You're not doing sort of a shotgun approach. I mean, what would you suggest for somebody in specific to pricing who wants to get into blind offers? What would you suggest? Or maybe they should stay away from blind offers. What would you say?
I think that if you're new to an area and you're new, especially if you're new to land, you will probably be best served either going with a ranged offer if you like a slightly more qualified lead, because that process is a little bit easier, because you just need to be in the ballpark. You don't have to be exactly on, or just go all the way to neutral, right? And then have those bring that feedback in, right? Get the feedback, have those conversations, you know, build up those like reps in the area to understand what the pricing needs to be. Then it is much easier once you have some of your own comps and you've spent a lot more time there to go back and say, I know what the price in this area is. I was just looking at it last week. This needs to be the price for that block. This corner over here is a little bit weird. We need to make sure we price those a specific way. So it's easier when you have the experience, especially as you're getting started, because otherwise you're gonna end up with something all over the place, and that's where we get those letters in. It's like somebody, you know, one letter's offering 10,000 acre and the other's offering 25,000 acre, and somebody is definitely wrong.
got you. Now, if they are, you know, let's say mailing a neutral or even a ranged offer, didn't get accepted, and would you suggest them to follow up with another offer? Is that part of your procedures as well, like to continue to follow up with an increased offer, or do you let it go? What would you typically do?
Yeah, historically we have mailed the same group of people on like that quarterly basis I described. This year, my ideology in that has been evolving. And so we're going to mail them in a tighter, the same group, but on a tighter window around a 5-week schedule. Okay. And that will be like send an offer and then some follow-ups to engage with them. I got the jury's out on that. Talk to me in a year, but like, that's where we're going to at the moment. I think that the key will be if anyone responds to you, like, first off, like aggressive on the follow-up, you follow up to close those deals. Because if they talk to you, that means they're interested. Even if you can't get together on price today, it might happen in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 10 months, you know, who knows? And if you want to, if you like the area and you thought there could be success there, then yeah, maybe you need to follow back up with another mailer, or maybe you need to alternate between neutrals and ranged. And like, the reality is that a lot of mail just comes down to timing. Like they're going to be receiving offers regularly, and it just, maybe your offer is awesome, or maybe you just happen to be the letter they picked up that day. Like it's hard to tell sometimes. And so there's a certain amount of it just being at the right place at the right time. And as long as it's not crazy, you'll probably have a shot.
I want to come back to pricing here again and just ask you, what kind of tools do you use to help your team with pricing? And you're going down to the APN block. So, you know, again, feel free to be as specific as you like, or as general as you like. But are there certain tools that you use specifically to help with pricing?
Yeah, well, our pricing is actually not super fancy on that side of it. We just use land.com and Zillow. Like that's where we go. Like that's effectively the same process we use to comp an individual property is the exact same process we use to comp our mailers. We want it to be an identical data set. When we come back around, have that conversation, that we're not surprised that we're looking at data set A and it looked one way, and now we're looking at data set B. So we use the same data set for comps in both scenarios.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for sharing that. I did ask you about remailing. Cool. Let's sort of steer this another direction. It sounds like you're making a lot of wins with mailing, which is great to hear, because I think a lot of people kind of fear mailing a little bit. But what is the challenge for you guys right now? Are there any challenges that you guys are, you know, actively working through right now?
I would say challenges we're facing in personally as a company is our evolution in how well we are tracking our performance. Historically, mail has been so good that like you just send the mail, make the money and move on. Like there wasn't a lot to it. And I find that as we grow as a company and as the niche grows, that the requirements to really perform at a high level they're getting higher and higher and higher. And so for us right now, that's manifesting in our need to really dig into our KPIs. Like our KPI usage, like our indicator usage has been so minimal historically. And it's kind of like disheartening to think about how bad we've been at like tracking our metrics in detail and regularly. You know, this quarter we've been really focused on that. And so just this week, we finally like finalized and launched all our KPIs. Like I was having a conversation with my team like 3 hours ago, and we're like, hey guys, we are now live with our KPIs. We're tracking them weekly. We're going to be talking about this continually. And I think that even with the preliminary work we've done to identify the right KPIs and to make sure that we have that data like gathered and quantified and displayed, like it has been huge. I've learned so much about my business in the last like couple of months as we've worked on that. That I thought, holy crap, why haven't we been doing this the whole time? Like we could have been so much more successful if we were just understood that part. And so I think that, yeah, like that's what we're really evolving on right now. And I feel like there's so much growth to be had in that sector.
I'd be interested to hear, you know, what kind of KPIs did you not expect, or did you never really look at to be, you know, quite important for you guys now as a team? Is there anything that sort of stands out?
Yeah, I would say some KPIs that were really like kind of eye-opening. Let me just think through this. I would say being able to look at, like, really dial in, even just our, something as simple as our response rate. You know, like, I had a good idea of what that looked like, but I had never taken the time to fully quantify, like, every response, and whether that came through a text that got sent to us or a call that went to Pat Live or a mail back, like, we weren't capturing all of this data. Right. And then identifying, like, how many people are calling us? Like, that should be one of our number one indicators on how our mail is doing. Right. But it has just been so good in the past that it was like, huh, that's not that critical. We'll figure it out. And like, no, I need to take the time to really see this. So things like, you know, mail response rate or even dialing down, and we could talk through lots of stuff on this front, but talking about, like, what is our conversion rate from the number of responses we get to people we put under contract, or how many contracts do you put under that don't actually make it all the way to closing? You know, so there's, like, all the way along this pipeline, there's so many interesting checkpoints that we haven't been taking the time to measure that I think there's so much to be gained in identifying that and seeing where the bottleneck is, where we're either bottlenecking or where we're falling down, and how we can improve our process to kind of step that up.
That's awesome. And thanks for sharing that. Now, this is something for you and your team to review regularly. What does that look like? Do you guys literally just sit down, review those numbers, look for something out of the ordinary, and then how do you address it? Like, what does that sort of look like? Is there sort of a procedure that you guys kind of go through with KPIs? You know, a lot of people sort of just collect them and have no idea what to do or how to even review it. What does that look like for your team?
Yeah, for us right now, what that looks like is everybody's responsible for different KPIs in the team, right? And some people are kind of, their primary role is collecting several of them. But we go through on Mondays, they go through and update all of their KPIs for last week that we've kind of laid out. They get them all into the sheet so that on Tuesday morning during our team meetings, we can sit down and go over together. We go over every KPI, like, how did we do on this? How is it trending? Are we headed the right direction? You know, is anybody struggling in any spots, and how can we help them, you know, kind of level back up, or are somebody blown it out of the water? What are they doing, and how do we make sure everyone's doing that? We basically review it on a weekly basis, and they're individually responsible for putting it into the sheet during that time. And that really, I think, helps lay out that accountability, right? Which is where, again, another aspect of collection and review that we just haven't been benefiting from that I'm excited to get into.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's one thing that I always also suggest is always keep a pulse on your KPIs, whatever they might be, because when you do it regularly, like you're doing, JT, on a weekly basis, it makes it so much easier to course correct than to, like, check on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis. By that time, it's going to be a little too late, and it's going to take a lot more digging to figure out. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And it's something that I don't typically hear too often, which is, you know, keeping an eye on some of the KPIs. Was there something that specifically led you guys to decide to look at your KPIs, or was it just like, hey, you knew you were, you didn't really, I'm sure you were tracking certain things, but, you know, why transition into, like, looking into further? Is it just because of the nature of the market that it's getting competitive, or what is it that you guys want to perform better? What is it that led you to start reviewing that now?
Yeah, transparently, I would say the number one thing that kind of lit the fire under us, me specifically, was the transition to a slightly larger team. You know, as we've moved away from, like, me plus two, where I, like, had a really good sense to what was going on with everybody, now me plus four is, like, just a little bit further out of reach. So it became clear that I had no idea what everyone was doing and how they were doing it. Like, and it started, felt like I was drifting a little bit out of reach. And I was like, okay, look, I need a way to understand how the team is doing so I can, like, give them the space and freedom they need to succeed while still maintaining an understanding of how everybody's doing overall. Right. And KPIs seem like the most natural way to do that. So whereas we've been thinking about and working on KPIs for a while, and we knew the team was going to grow, we're trying to get ahead of that. It became, like, paramount as soon as we got everybody on board and we started getting up to speed that I was like, oh man, we really need these KPIs in place to make sure that we can, like, understand at a more granular level every step along the pipeline and how we're doing at it.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So is there anything that you guys are experimenting with? I think you mentioned a little bit earlier that you guys were experimenting with follow-ups and mailing. Do you want to dive into that a little bit more, or is there anything else you guys are experimenting? I wanted to bring this up so that people realize, hey, business continues to change. It continues to evolve. This is a living thing, and that's part of the fun. So I don't get to ask this too often. So JT, I mean, is there anything that you're experimenting with or trying right now that you're excited about?
Yeah, I will say that on keeping with the mail theme, like one of the things that we're experimenting with right now, and this is like super nerdy, but we are building out like a custom system to help our mail be hyper unique. So basically we are collecting, we have a proprietary like data warehouse where we store all this data about the properties and about our owners and things, the sellers we're targeting. And we're starting to leverage that data we've been collecting over the last year and turning it into data points that help inform how we build their letter. So like their letter will be customized to them. Like, oh, you have wetlands on your property? We're going to talk about wetlands in your letter, right? Oh, you have, we know that like you fit into a particular like demographic that, you know, we can help. We're going to talk about that, right? We're going to lean our, we're going to lean our verbiage that way. So, because the goal for us is to make sure that like they feel like after they've read this letter that we understand their problem and we can help them solve it, right? That we're the experts in that field and then we can offer them a solution. And we can, right? But it's hard to convey that sometimes in a standardized letter you send to the same 100,000 people. But if I can at least modify it a little bit for every person or every group, then it allows me to like focus in my message and help them speak directly to their problems or whatever challenges they're facing and then help them identify like, yes, this is the people who can help us kind of move past this or move through this.
So I'm assuming you have a procedure of sort of collecting this data when you sort of have a conversation with them and you're sort of making note of that basically. Is that correct?
Well, this is actually before that, very preliminary. So we go, we have a collection of every 1 acre and up property and all in both the states we work. So we have a database of all of those. And then we identify who owns them. And then we go get all of the data for all of those people that meet our, we funnel down the properties to the ones we know we want. And then we go get the data for all of those people so that we can say, here are all the properties and their characteristics that we're going to mail. Here are the information about those owners. Let's merge those together and create a letter.
A lot more sophisticated than what I was saying.
Yeah, that's what we're experimenting with right now. So we're like, let's see how this goes. It's been underway for a few months, and a few months more work to be done on it. But I'm hopeful that it can be the next evolution for us in our mailing process. But time will tell.
That's super exciting stuff. I'd love to bring you back on in the future to talk about what were the results and what you got from there. But anyways, JT, what does the day-to-day look like for you? Again, you've got a small team. You said you recently had 2 more people. What does the day-to-day look like for you as a business owner from waking up to the end of your day? I would love to hear what that sounds like.
Oh, good question. So for me, I would say the average day I like roll over in bed, grab my phone, and then proceed to answer emails and messages for like, I'm like a work from bed kind of guy. I'm like, okay, how long can I stay in bed before I have to go to the computer, right? So I'll be on my phone working for an hour sometimes before I'm like, all right, well, ran out of stuff to do from the phone, time to actually get to work. But that's usually how I kind of slow roll in the morning. I'm not an early riser. I'm like, if I can get up at 8:30 or 9, that's a pretty solid day. I don't like to set meetings before like 10 if I can help it. So that's usually how I get started. Once I get going, I'm here in my like casita/office. And I have one other teammate here who works alongside me. He lives nearby. And everyone else is virtual. So it's mostly virtual culture. And so we just kind of collaborate throughout the week, but my average is come in, you know, handle emails, make sure we kind of go through my to-do list. I use Todoist extensively. And that helps me keep organized on like what has to be done that day, what's priority. And then we just kind of go through it and depends on the day. The days vary a lot. Right now it's a lot of focusing on like these new systems and our marketing. And whether it's like getting deals closed and signing docs or whatever needs to happen for that day, we kind of just take it down the list and check it off. And then I kind of interact with the team throughout the day. And so we get to the end and I'm hoping I got all my stuff done. And if not, I have to move it to tomorrow.
What was the first thing you got rid of that you didn't want to do that you no longer do that, you know, one of your team members looks after now? Like,
oh yeah,
early on, what would have that been?
Very first thing was talking to sellers and buyers. Like I am okay at best when it comes to that. And it just sucks the life out of me. So I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to pass. I'm going to find somebody who actually enjoys that. So yeah. Very first thing I did was hire somebody to help me handle that. And so, yeah,
was there certain personality traits or characteristics that you looked for to handle that?
You know, at the time, I was not sophisticated enough to do that. I mostly just found someone who said, hey, this is what you're going to be doing all the time. How do you feel about that? And they said, that sounds fun. And I was like, sweet, you're in. You know, so it was a little more involved than that, but it's effectively how it went. And luckily, they've been great. And I've been, you know, we've been training and growing for the last couple of years because they were like the first person I hired. But That is how, since then, my hiring processes have evolved quite a bit. The most recent hire we made along those lines was a full-time disposition manager. And it's, we in-house all of our sales. So I have a guy whose job is just to sell our properties full-time. Wow. And his hiring process was much more involved, much more, there's a lot more steps and, you know, particular disc profiles I'm looking for and like kind of working that way. But yeah, it's sometimes at the beginning, it just needed somebody to help me, you know, and whether it was, being an engineer, I always want the perfect solution. But I'm glad that I just found a good solution and then ultimately became a really good solution over time. Because sometimes, you know, often done beats perfect. So I just gotta keep going sometimes.
I hope you're enjoying this episode here with JT. And one of the things he will talk about a little bit later and that he has talked about as well is his love for his passions, like anime, like video games, something that I'm also very passionate about as well. And JT has now grown a team to be able to find time to do the things that he loves doing. He may have always been able to do those things, but he's able to do that now a lot easier because he's got people in his team that are helping him to grow and scale up his business. It's given him room to also try different things, to experiment with different things, and really allow him to get back to the things that he only likes doing. And that all comes with when you're able to scale and have processes in place and find the freedom to be able to do those things. And that's why I run something called the Dirt Hacker Challenge. Now, a lot of people think this is a 5-day contest or something like that. They've heard about it. They don't know what it is. It's actually a 5-day challenge workshop where I go through the framework on buying back your time, on finding freedom, and really trying to autopilot or put your business or certain parts of your business on autopilot. And it is very doable. And that's one of the things I love about Land, and that I got into Land early on. I recognized, oh my gosh, this business is a complete laptop business and it can be scaled up. And so across these 5 days, I teach something called the Hack Framework. It has, a lot of you guys do know that I'm the founder of Pebble. It has nothing to do with Pebble. In fact, everything to do with how we build processes, how we find talent, how do we go through the processes of hiring. So I do this every single month. And I used to do this challenge. It was at $250. Now I've made this so accessible. And I don't know how long I'll be keeping this at this price, but it is literally very accessible. It's $5. I mean, that's probably as much as you would spend on a coffee nowadays. And it is 5, 6, 7 hours of training. I've got special guests that come in to talk to us as well. Anyways, if you're interested in learning more on buying back your time, on finding freedom, which I think most of us came into this business originally for, was the freedom to be able to control our own time. You want to check this challenge or challenge workshop out that goes on for 5 days. It happens every month. Head over to dirthackerchallenge.com. I'll see you guys there. Anyways, enjoy the rest of this episode here with JT. Well, I know you're huge on anime. We've talked about it before. Where do you find time for that? Do you watch it on a daily? Do you binge?
Yeah. All the time. That's funny. I think I put in 3 hours last night. You know what I'm saying? So like, I will take my days until my brain starts to fog. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm just kind of worthless for anything serious right now. Like I can't think through really hard problems. And like, I've done all the easy stuff and everything else has to go to tomorrow when I'm fresh. I'm just going to like sit down. I had dinner with my family every night. And then like there's some buffer time after that where I'm like hanging out with the kids, helping my wife. And then as they kind of head to bed, then it's like, all right, now it's anime time. We're going to sit down and watch for an hour, 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours if it's a good night. But yeah, I super enjoy it.
I'm going to come back to that here, but I have one more question, you know, related to land here. You know, if you were to start land again today, you were starting scratch, you know, what would the first several months look like? Take it for, you know, however long you want to think, you know, somewhere it's 3 months, 6 months. What would you do? You know, how would you approach land business? What would you do to kind of get moving and getting momentum as quick as possible?
When I've talked to people about this, probably over the last year or so, occasionally I have these conversations. And my usual advice is to find a differentiator. That's probably the core of it. Because, you know, again, when I started 5-6 years ago, it was fish in a barrel time and it was great. Okay. And anybody could have done it. Now the competition has gone up quite a bit. It's still very accessible, especially compared to other types of flipping or investing. And I still think it's one of the best opportunities out there. But it's not, it's a lot more developed as a niche. And so in order to break through the noise, you have to find the way in which you're going to do that. Like when you get to a certain scale, it's just like brute force. Like you could just send enough letters to make deals happen, right? Yeah. But when you're starting out and you don't want to drop $50,000 in mail in your first mailer, you need to like decide, how am I going to reach these people in a way? And either you can do something inexpensive like texting or RVMs or something that has a very low lead cost. Or if you want to do mail, you need to decide how do I get them to call me back? What can I do? Can I just work in my personal area where my brand and I'm a local and it's going to be a huge, I'm going to like really hit it off with these people? Or can I be really specific about the properties I mail? I'm going to spend a lot of time scrubbing my data. So I'm only sending like 500 letters, but it's to the exact perfect people. You know, you'd have to find a way to really narrow it down and then to really speak to them in a way that they you can resonate, because that's where your opportunities are going to come, right? You have to find a way to kind of break through the noise when they're getting letters weekly sometimes. They have a lot of dissonance, and so they have to decide, like, what can you do to help kind of break through that? And so that's usually what I push people to do, is find that thing you're going to focus on. And then realize it doesn't have to be perfect. Like you're gonna like, as long as you can get that right and you can have good conversations with these people, you can work your way through the other struggles. Like you don't have to have everything set up. You don't have to have a perfect sales process. You don't have to have a VA for everything. Like you just need to get started and find that way you're going to connect with them. And then you can make deals happen. Like there's so many opportunities continually occurring around you and in your area with people who are just making those connections, building relationships, and then, you know, making deals happen.
For those that are just starting though, you know, how is it that they can sort of find their thing to differentiate themselves? Does it have to do with research, or does it mean that they just get started and they figure it out along the way? How did you go about figuring that out?
Yeah, that came, I would say that came for me over time. To where I am now. My evolution of what I thought was going to be my differentiator to now has changed. Right. But the taking the first steps were critical, or I never would have gotten here. I would say that, kind of back to the conversation we had earlier, if you know what you want your business to look like long-term, you can start today like crafting that, and crafting your brand, crafting your message, crafting who you are, and how you want to communicate. And that will kind of lay the foundation. And sometimes it is, it's just, you know, as straightforward as being like, I am, I'm just thinking of an example I spoke to recently where it's like, she was a woman in her like kind of mid 40s. And she was like, how am I going to connect? I'm like, look, you're from Southern Arizona, you know? You can send mail to Southern Arizona, right? Like, and you're going to be like, I'm a native. I'm from Southern Arizona. Like we should connect. And that is going to break through. Cause like, I don't know anybody else who's doing that. Like I can't name anyone else who's like, yep, I'm in Southern Arizona and I serve Southern Arizona and I've been here my whole life. And like that, if you send that as your message, there you 100% will resonate with some people. And those people are going to call you and you're going to have a great conversation. You're going to build rapport, and then you can see, you will find out if you can solve their problem. And even if you can't, you might open the doors for things down the road. Like you just need to like start that process. It is like a buildup over time. But you can just take the things that you have, either attributes about you or things that you're passionate about, and you can connect on that level.
Yeah. I love that. JT, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I'm coming into this part of the podcast where I'm calling it sort of the quick fire round here. I would typically ask, you know, outside of land, what do you like doing? I think I know what you like doing, which is all here if you're watching the video.
Yes.
So tell us, what's your favorite anime? What are you currently watching? Okay, so what are you watching right now? And if somebody were to get into anime, what should they start watching?
Ooh, what's that's a good question. Anime? Yeah.
So first of all, you.
So I will say, what am I watching right now? I honestly, I'm moving through stuff pretty fast at the moment. I will say I'm kind of binging like comedic isekai. There's a particular like category. It's basically people who have been transported to another world in the show. And so that there's a kind of a particular vein of anime. And they tend to be kind of, they're funny and they're lighthearted. And that's typically what I enjoy most about anime is this kind of lighthearted genre. And it tends to be pretty fun. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I've watched a lot of different shows on that front. As for where to get started, I would say like anything by Studio Ghibli. Hayao Miyazaki is going to be great. I recommend those a lot. We own all of them, so we loan them out to friends and family who want to get started, and that tends to be a great place. There's a few kind of blockbuster hits that have been around recently that I could recommend from other places, but I think that anything by him is going to be classic. And so just finding one of those that really kind of resonates with you would probably be a good starting point.
That's awesome. I don't know if you typically read, but if you read, can you recommend one book that you've read recently and why would it be?
I would say
fiction or nonfiction.
Yeah, I read a lot of nonfiction right now and have for years. I would say the best book I read last year was The Comfort Crisis. It was fantastic. So the book is all about how one of the major problems we face in a first world country is that we always want to be comfortable all the time. And that kind of wears on you over a long period of time, right? Over decades. So, and he talks about kind of the benefits of being uncomfortable and how like it's psychologically and physically can have a huge impact. And so I really, really enjoyed that. I'm also a second, I don't know, but I'm rereading the 21 Laws of Leadership right now. A couple of times. I think that's a really fantastic leadership book I can't really put down right now. So
I will make sure to mention that in the show notes. Now you said Comfort Crisis was that first one. Really interesting and I want to check that one out.
The Comfort Crisis. Yeah, I forget the name of the author, but I think it's a great book.
What's one thing you did as a kid that you wish you could do more nowadays? Now you've got kids, so maybe you can do more of it with your kids. Because I certainly do that with my kid.
Yes. Something I did as a kid, huh? It's something that I still do, to be honest, but I'm glad I do and I want to continue to do is like, I love binging video games with like loved ones. So whether that's like friends or family or whatever, I love playing collaborative games where it's like, I'll get in a video game and I will still to this day, usually every other month or so, get together with my brothers. We'll play video games for like 24 hours straight and then crash. Right. But it's like, it's such a fun pattern. And I just really love the connectivity and that it's been that way for years. And I just really enjoy that. And that's an aspect of my life that I prioritize because I just think it's so, so enjoyable.
That's awesome. Is there a specific video game recently that you've been playing or checking out?
Oh gosh. It took us 3 years of sessions to finish. But we finished Divinity Original Sin 2. It's a really long game, but it's a great four player. And super, super long. So we just wrapped that up. That's probably what I call out.
So would you be excited for Baldur's Gate 3?
We're going to have to take a breather before we get that serious again. but so we're playing a couple other random games. You know, we always go out to StarCraft 2 and those kind of things. Yeah. But we'll probably get around to it. I'm pretty confident. In time.
I'm just so happy to meet another person in this space that talks about video games. There's not many. All right. So my last question here, or actually a couple more questions. Who would you recommend to have on this podcast and why? This is how I get my guests now. And again, several people have recommended you already, JT, so you can't recommend yourself. But anybody else, even if I've had them on before?
Oh, goodness. That's a tough one. There's so many great investors. Have you spoken to Amy Brazil? I don't remember if she's been on the
podcast. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I don't know. So it's like, you know what? How long was that? Amy's a couple. She would be a great, I love talking to Amy. She's fantastic. So she'd be a great one. But
I will reach out to her again. I'm glad you brought her up. Actually, it's been a while since I chatted with her. Is there some specific reason or anything I should talk to her about specifically?
You know, one of the things I love about Amy is like, not only does she has a kick butt business, but like she is so down to earth and she just gets it. Like she's so much experience. She's like, look, this is how life is. Let me tell you about it. And you're like, I love it. I love hearing from Amy. She's the best.
Okay. This has been an awesome interview with you, JT. Even on the personal front, just hearing all the stuff that you're into, it's something that I'm very aligned with. But how can people engage with you, or how can they reach out? Do you even want people to reach out to you? I should have asked you that before the show. I don't know. Do you sort of communicate with others? Are you part of a group, or I don't know? I'll kind of leave it open ended for you as well.
Yeah, people feel free to reach out to me and connect. I'd say that honestly, the simplest way, the most reliable way, probably just to hit up our website at olmsted.properties. And there's a contact form there. If you want to reach out to me, feel free to do it through there. It'd be a great spot.
Awesome. Well, JT, thanks again for coming on the show and like diving on just your marketing, your operations. It's so interesting to have a conversation of somebody who's just in it, doing it, and finding success in it. Sometimes, you know, the show is about a specific thing or a specific theme. I just had a good time just chatting with you about your business. So I'm sure a lot of people found a lot of nuggets listening to you. So JT, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble. If you found this helpful, we'd greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening, and catch you on our next episode.